The following program is rated M for a mature audience. It contains coarse language.
Hide the kids and the easily offended. This is the Nate Darling Show, uncensored.
I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes.
Now, here's Nate and the gang.
All right, motherfuckers. It's time to let loose with the body talk.
About fucking time.
Have I told you about my left nipple?
No, what's going on with your left nipple?
It's body talk.
Oh.
It's a little inverted.
Is it?
Yeah, the right one sticks out a little further.
Hmm.
I mean, I can coax it out.
Yeah.
But you gotta tease it just so.
Yeah, I get that.
Of course.
I get that.
Yeah. It's all good.
It's like sometimes, you know, you gotta pre-fluff a little bit, you know, before you walk out, you know.
Walk out where? Where are you going?
Anywhere, you know.
Just anywhere. Rolling into Safeway, you're like, I need to have my package at a certain level to walk into Safeway.
Listen, you know, when you're working with a tuna can. I mean, you know, you scrape the sides.
Tuna packet.
Not a tuna packet. Tuna can.
You know, in referring to sex, I don't know that tuna can is really a term you want to be using.
No, it's probably not.
Coming up on the show today, oh, good times. There is going to be a tobacco-free Finland, plus another episode of Sex Toy News.
Yes.
Oh, and there's a yarn shop owner who's nothing but a bitch.
Oh.
We'll talk about all those things.
Is she a mother? Is she a lover undercover?
Well, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
We'll get into all of that. Also, Jason Knight from JD Knight Films is here. He's been here all night shooting the show, doing a little mini doc on
JD in the place to be,
doing a little doc on the show. So he asked me, when can we sit down and do the interview? Because in every documentary, no matter how short or long, there's an interview. And I said, let's do it on the show. So we're going to do that coming up in a little bit. But first, we've got to do this.
Now it's time for the airing of the fucking grievances.
Jason, you've taken a beating tonight. Well, on Friday's show.
Yeah, yeah.
What's been rubbing you the wrong way?
Oh, man. So what's really fucking just been pissing me the fuck off is how weak my fucking stomach is now. Like, I'm so fucking pissed. Like, So my wife made chili last week, right? And like, I love chili, and it was a good spicy chili, but like, I had it for lunch today, and that shit was coming up, and I can't eat the really hot. I used to love really hot Thai food. Like when I lived in Joshua Tree, there was this place next door called the Royal Siam, and it was amazing. And the guy made me, like, I told him to make me the hottest thing ever. Like, just, I told him to make it how he would make it for himself. It was hot. It was fucking so spicy that I swear to God that I was hallucinating after eating this shit. It was amazing. And I've been chasing that dragon ever since. But not until like about a year and a half ago. All of a sudden, like, that shit just fucks me up. And it's fucking, it pisses me off. Because I like that shit. I liked fucking eating really spicy fucking hot food that made me fucking sweat. It was awesome. It was invigorating. And now, fucking kills my stomach. And then not just does it kill my stomach, the next day, it's fucking hell on my ass. Like, my ass fucking burns so much. Like, I'm worried now about tomorrow, because my ass is gonna fucking, it's gonna sting bad.
Oh,
you know?
That's the worst.
Was it a year and a half ago that she started gradually taking your balls?
Oh, my God. I moved in about a year and a half ago.
Now, last week we found out you can't have Popeyes anymore.
Well, that's kind of the thing, like, right? I mean, it's because I always would eat, like a packet of hot sauce on each piece of chicken that I had. Mm. So I'm eating lots of, like, it was really hot sauce. I mean, and same thing happened with the buffalo dip that I make that's amazing. Like, my buffalo chicken dip, it's fucking amazing. But if I eat too much, like, this shit backs me up now. Mm. Fucking getting old sucks fucking balls. It sucks fucking balls so bad. Like, it's fucking horrible. And fuck you, body, for fucking doing this shit to me, all right? Like, you already fucking, like, I broke my leg, all right? I'm already have a fucking limp. At least let me fucking, I don't drink fucking alcohol anymore, all right? Let me just fucking enjoy some hot, spicy fucking food, you know? God damn it! Fucking piece of shit.
We traced it back.
Do you at least have some moist wipes at home?
No, my wife wouldn't let me use those in the fucking toilet. You fucking kidding me? Not only that, that shit's fucking expensive, man. Those wipes are fucking expensive. Yeah, fuck the cost of wipes and fuck the cost of diapers. Jesus, I'll start fucking complaining now. Oh, man.
Well done.
Man.
So that's when I'm pissed off. Now.
Fair. Kareem, what's been bugging you?
I can't even mess with you no more. That's how bad it is.
Now, if you'd known that before, you wouldn't have messed with him before.
Oh, man. What's pissing me off is the fact that people don't understand that we all live in this fucking world and that you have to share. You have to, you know, with all of this shit that's going on with that guy that y'all elected, it's just people not really fucking understanding how the world works. People living on this fantasy of, oh, the immigrants are taking our jobs. Like, no, a fucking robot took your job. Your job is gone. That shit does not exist anymore. We need to get along with people in other countries because we can't fucking go it alone. We can't do everything by ourselves. You bought into the myth that we're the greatest country on earth and that everybody's going to bow down to us. Like, no. People are going to figure out how to fucking do shit without us, and we're going to be sitting here by ourselves picking our fucking noses.
I would argue that we are the greatest country on earth, but because of that, countries and people will follow us when we're doing things right. Because of that. But at a certain point, I don't care how great you are, the middle fingers are coming up all around the world, and they're like, fuck you.
I have to agree with you there on that, yeah.
Because honestly, ask virtually anybody anywhere, and if they're honest, they will tell you that the United States of America is the greatest country on earth when we're not being complete assholes.
I will agree with you there.
That's it.
Yes.
That's all I will say. Here, I have a complaint, and it's a local Sacramento complaint. And I don't know all the details yet as we're recording this. But today, at some point in the afternoon, some woman pulled her car over just short of the Tower Bridge between West Sacramento and Sacramento and got out of the car and put some wires like toward the gas tank. Who knows what's going on with that, but they have to assume it's a bomb. So one of the three bridges that go across from Sacramento into West Sacramento, which also means Interstate Business 80, Highway 50 coming through, is tied up. And it was just a goddamn mess trying to get home. Just everything's stalled. And I know this happens in other cities, and it's like, so you were inconvenienced while someone was feeling suicidal on a bridge. Yeah, that sucks. I'm just saying. I'm going to say it. It sucks when that happens. And I don't really know what this woman's deal was, but I hope she had a righteous cause. Because if she didn't have a righteous cause, I'm all for throwing the book at her. You know which book? One of those little... and you'll know soon, Jason. Those golden books for kids that have the really sharp corners. I want to throw them at her face. Because those are going to sting like a motherfucker. When they hit her on the corner, just like right in the corner of the eye. Might lose an eye. I don't care. You fucked with Rush Hour. Lady.
Not Rush Hour.
I did say Rush Hour.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
She fucked with Rush Hour.
Just like Brett Ratner did on part 2 and 3, which was horrible.
It was.
It's last goddamn time. I want somebody to use his fucking brain.
Yeah.
Can I? Oh my God. Fuck Brett Ratner. That guy. Fuck that guy. Like, how do you fuck up a movie with Alan Alda, Eddie Murphy, like some of the greatest people ever, Ben Stiller? How do you fuck shit up that bad to be like, make the Tower Heist movie that fucking god awful? Like, you are a, like, even like the thing, I think I learned something that made me like, oh, he might be a good guy, but that guy's a fucking douche. Like, he fucks shit up. Like, Rush Hour is the only good thing that he ever did. It's only ever, that's the only good thing he's ever fucking done. Like, I, oh my God, fucking dude. Sorry.
Now I'm gonna have the song ready for whenever Jason starts to get wound up.
Tell me not, like, do you guys not agree? Tower Heist was a fucking god-awful movie with what had to be one of the best casts that there's been. Like, that was a great cast. That should have been a fucking awesome movie.
And it was not.
It was a fucking piece of shit. It was a piece of shit. It was, like, you could not, like, I've seen dogs that had, like, it was a big pile, steaming pile of shit.
St. Bernard size?
St. Bernard. Like, fucking no, the fucking, that dog, the bear dog that comes out of, like, Siberia, Russia. It's fucking, like, 400 pounds. Like, that dog.
I love that with everything going on in the world, Jason still has time to be mad at Brett Ratner.
You guys should be, too.
I just didn't go see the movie.
Yeah, make two of us.
www.IHateBrettRatner.com.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was good in Entourage, where he played himself. Not the movie, the TV show. The movie Entourage was not good. It wasn't Brett Ratner bad, but
no, it was not Brett Ratner bad.
That's the level. That's how you know where you are. Is it Brett Ratner bad? No? Okay. All right. Now that we've done our complaining, some legitimate and me talking about the lady on the bridge. By the way, the bridge did not blow up. I would have heard it.
We would have definitely heard it
because you can hear fireworks from Rayleigh Field from here, loud and clear.
You guys would have heard it, actually. Funny enough,
yeah.
If we were recording,
yeah, everybody would have heard it a little bit. Like, what is that boom? Oh, yeah, that's that late model Nissan blowing up. It's time to get to the questions for this documentary thing that we're shooting here tonight. And my friend Jason Knight has I've opened up his microphone.
Hello, thanks for having me, and thanks for playing along.
Oh yeah, thanks for coming out and doing it. So I'm going to turn the floor over to you. I will answer any and all questions in a somewhat truthful manner.
A somewhat truthful manner.
And I'm going to try not to hit my headphones on my mic stand too badly for this. So sorry about that.
Okay, we're going to start basic. How long have you been doing the show?
I have been doing the show for 5.5 years. Started in the summer of 2011 with Larry Mead, now Larry Glover Mead, and Mel Gelbart and myself in my one bedroom apartment in the living room, huddled around a coffee table, and two of the three of us sitting on a couch, or as the intro of the show used to say, cheap IKEA couch, because that is what it was.
I remember seeing those good old days. How's the show changed since you started?
It's changed a lot since we started because the host changed. As the co-host changed, the sort of feel of the show changed. And because we talk about not just our lives, but this isn't a podcast that's based on guests. This is a podcast that's based on crazy stuff that's going on in the world and kind of what our take on it is. And sometimes it's stuff from our personal life. Sometimes it's a lot of news. The show was born out of news and out of a stage show that I did for a while at the Comedy Spot. It was called Talking Shit with Nate Darling, where I would do a lot of what we do in the podcast here. And it was just finding a way for that to happen. But as the cast members changed, the show changed. When we started, it was once a week. It was an hour show once a week. It was actually supposed to be 45 minutes, but an hour show once a week. Then we expanded to 2-hour long shows every week. And now we do 3 shows a week, and we changed it up so that we do 2 of our shows are radio-friendly shows. So they're clean shows. The shows that drop on Wednesday and Friday, we edit out any cursing because from talking to people who are like, well, I like the show, but I can't really listen with my kids around. So I'm like, okay, how can we fix that? And so we do a little editing. The topics are still the same. It's still a show for grownups. It's just more PG-13 when we're talking about a variety of things. The Monday show, which we're doing right now, is just balls out, do whatever. And this is what the show used to be straight out. It was just cursing and butt plugs and whatever. And
Lots of butt plugs.
Yes. Lots of butt plug talk.
Yeah, no, I mean, but you were plugging butts.
That's true. It's true. We had a big following of butt plugs.
How has the reaction been to the clean shows?
You know, people just sort of they like it. But people were like, "Well, why did you do it? Why did you do it?" And I just sort of explained why we did it. But I don't think people miss out on anything because we didn't change the topics we talked about. And I think that was the key. If we would have said we're going to do clean shows and we're going to talk about wholesome topics, I think it wouldn't have rung true for what we do. And I think that's one of the reasons that people listen, is because there's a truthfulness to what we do. Even when we do go tongue in cheek and we're sort of busting each other's chops about things and we're exaggerating for comedic effect, there is an inherent truth in what we're saying and what we're doing.
How long have you been working with these guys?
Let's see. Kareem, I've been working with for the longest continuously, and I'm trying to remember when you came on. It's been over 2 years now.
Yeah.
That you've been doing the show with me.
Yeah, because I would fill in before I would fill in when he needed somebody to fill in too. So.
Yeah. So Kareem's been doing it regularly for a couple of years. Jason for a little over a year, but even Jason had been a fill in on the show going back to 2011, 2012. Mm-hmm. So they're guys that basically the show has been staffed by people that I did improv or stand up with. They're comedians who, you know, just enjoy talking. We're having conversations and, you know, we're building friendships and bonds and stuff like that. So when you're listening to the show, it's really a lot of just like hanging out with your friends, listening to them. Like if you heard show 280 or 487, Kareem was really busting on Jason hard. Now, I know this is going to come out a little bit later, but go back. You can get all the shows on NateDarlingShow.com. Show 487, Kareem is hard on Jason, but in a really funny way. It was a fun show. And
yeah, for you guys,
it was a delight.
And then there have been shows where me and him have gotten the shouting matches.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. like the shit. Who was here with that day? To the point where she got scared. I think it was. She got really quiet.
Oh, was it Becca?
I believe it was Diana Hong. Uh-huh. Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I've never. I don't ever want to silence anybody who's coming on the show. I want them to be able to go, you can speak your mind and you will be heard, even though, you know, it's the Nate Darling show. If you're on the show, you're part of the show.
It was last week. I felt like I was like reliving my childhood between like when my parents got a divorce.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was like eighth grade shit. It reminded me of eighth grade when my dad left my stepmom.
But we're still here, Jason. We still love you.
Yeah, no, I know. But I mean, I did like maybe brought up some memories, guys. It's like trying to soothe them. I was like, "Hey, you guys want to get some ice cream? Go to a movie, maybe.
whatever we have to do."
Well, I come from a large family, so we argue like well, and it's not even really arguing. That's how we talk to each other. So, like, you have to be loud in order to get heard. Period. So, to me, that's what it's like.
Kind of bust your balls out of love.
Oh yeah, like seriously. If you were sensitive, you would probably be crying if you were actually around my family for any amount of time.
Well, and I think the reason that Kareem and I can do that is we were both able to go, this is not a person. This is not a personal attack back and forth. This is a disagreement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's a disagreement of ideas, ideals, and perceptions of things.
The funniest thing is like, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're arguing about the same thing.
We're on the same side a
they're
lot of the time.
The same page.
Yeah.
So we're trying to curtail the arguing about the same thing from the same side.
Yeah.
You touched on it a little bit. How did you start the show, or why did you start the show?
I started the show because I came to Sacramento and I got into comedy. I got into improv first, and then I got into stand up. And I wanted to have a little bit more control over my comedy and how I was delivering it to people. Because when you're doing improv, you're in a group and you're very reliant. And I'm reliant on a group here too, but you are incredibly reliant on a group. You need a theater. You need a place to do it. You need to have the agreement of what you're going to do. And that was just getting increasingly frustrating for me. And I transitioned. I did stand-up for a while. And the thing with stand-up is, and if you've never done it, you don't really realize it. I would say, Kareem, and back me up on this, if you will, 90% of the stand-up you do will be for a room of other comedians who will never laugh at it.
Yeah.
And it got frustrating hearing the same stuff over and over and over again. And the way comedy tends to work, stand-up comedy tends to work, is a lot of times the people who get rewarded and moved up into shows are people who bring a lot of people to shows. They've got friends and family who roll out to things. And that only makes sense. You're trying to run a business. You're trying to get people in. So people who are headlining comedians are going to be booking other comedians who can bring people, or who whatever, for whatever reason that they mesh with. And yeah. I didn't find myself really meshing with anybody. I was just different. And I'm like, how can I deliver the comedy that I want to do to people? And having had a background in radio, and I love doing radio. What I didn't love about radio was the paycheck, because it was really, really small. And Jason worked in radio too, so he knows. And there was always, it was fun doing it. And I'm like, how can I recapture the fun of doing that? And we're really not making money here. I mean, every cent we've made has gone back into the show. And if I were to tally it up, I'm still way behind. Because there's always new things that need to happen. New computer needs to be bought. A new iPad needs to be bought. So it's sort of like a hobby, and just, like I said, it came out of that. And I was doing this show called Talking Shit with Nate Darling. And I would get up on stage and I would find clips and I would play them. And it did very well in terms of audience reaction, but it was hard to get an audience out. Because it was, when you start out with a show, you do not start with a really great time period.
Yeah. Were you like 10:30 or 11?
It got moved. I was on at 10:30 or 11, and then the next month it was 8:00.
Yeah.
It was 8:00, and when the email went out saying what the shows were that night at the club, that was omitted. So when the email Oops. Went out, it said the first show was the 9:00 show.
Yeah.
So there was nothing, and it wasn't done with malice or anything like right. that. So it was just really a way to do that. And I found doing improv, you're talking to 100 people in a packed club.
Yeah.
Doing stand up, you're talking to 50, 100 people, if you're lucky. If you're not talking to a room full, maybe 20 people
yeah.
who are doing that. This, we reach out all over the world. We have listeners all across the country, all around the world, people we know, people we don't know, people who find us.
We're huge. We're huge.
Sure. We're big in Japan. No, we're not.
And China.
But that's the thing is there is no real limit to what we can do. And I can do it from my house. I was able to do it from my living room couch and sort of take control of my voice being out there in comedic terms. That was a really long-winded answer. What a dick.
No, that worked. It worked. I can edit. I'll cut the hell out of that.
Well, on the show, it's going to be really long and bloviating, but go on.
I'll edit my questions for you.
That's okay.
You've answered them all already.
And I want something that I can answer. No, I'm just kidding. Come on. No. Nate's an ass. No, it's
good. I'll have something for you guys in just a second. A lot of podcasts kind of come and go,
mm-hmm.
Especially on like kind of the local level of things. What made you stick around? Why do you keep doing it?
I like it. Ultimately, I like doing it because I get a creative fulfillment from doing it. And I've had people who have sent me emails, who've called me, sent me notes on Facebook or various other ways of saying that they really enjoyed it and it made their day and they were listening, and it's just fun for them to be able to escape like that. And to be able to have an impact on somebody else's life in that sort of small way, in a very personal way, is really rewarding like that. And it's just fun. And honestly, I've been very lucky because the most frightening thing for me happened about, you know, we were about 68 shows into the run when Larry and Mel both came to me and said, we have to leave the show individually. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? These two are fantastic. And if you go back and you can listen to the first 70 shows, they're both fantastic. And I love them both dearly. But in the year and a quarter that we were doing the show together, their lives changed drastically. Larry met his now husband. Mel ended up moving in with her boyfriend. So there were huge changes in their lives, which meant it really wasn't, they weren't able to do it because there's time constraints and stuff like that. And when the show was first being launched, there were people going, well, why don't you come up with a cool, clever way to combine your name and Larry's name? And I thought, because Larry is going to leave. Now, maybe that's because I had been divorced twice, so I just assumed that my partner was going to leave. But I went in assuming that at some point, the commitment of my partner's would not be the same as mine. So that's why my name is on the show. That's why I've carried on with that. But I was lucky that I reached out to my friends who were comedians, and we brought in Christiana, who came in after they left, and then Ted Sampson and Becca Costello, and they came in and they did the show for 2 years. It was 2 years with that group. And then they started to leave, and Kareem came on, and Diana Hong came on for a while, and Sam Platz came on for a while as these people faded away, all for the same sort of reasons. Christiana got busier with her career. Ted changed careers. Becca went back to school and was doing other things, and she just didn't have the time to do it. And as this happened, and then Jason came back into the fold, and it's just been this sort of evolution and carrying on of what we do. And I think we have fun doing it. I mean, I can't speak for these guys, but I enjoy doing it.
That kind of leads me to the next question. And if you already answered the second part of this question, I think you kind of did, but I'll let you go. What is your favorite moment of the show, and what was the hardest moment for you on the show?
The hardest moment was when, and it wasn't on the show, it was when Mel and Larry left.
Yeah.
Because of that initial uncertainty of, oh my God, what am I going to do? Can I do a Rush Limbaugh thing? Am I going to have to do a show by myself? What if nobody listens? What's going to happen with that? And as far as my favorite moment on the show, God, I don't know. There have just been so many really good ones over the course. I mean, we are, as we're recording this, on show number 488. So that is a lot of content over the course of 5.5 years. And there's just been a lot of laughter. And that's really the thing. I've come in when I felt terrible and sat down to do the show, and just, we start talking, friends start talking, you just feel better. And I know from people who listen, they say the same thing happens to them. They listen to the show and they start to feel better about their crap day or their pain in the ass boss or what, or their flat tire that they had that just pissed them off. And it's just kind of nice.
Cool. What would you say to someone who was going to start a podcast?
Don't. No, I'm just, I think the big thing when you're starting a podcast, and this was my most important thing, we actually wanted to start 3 months before we dropped our first show. And I would say this: test your equipment, make sure that you sound okay. I mean, you don't have to sound like a professional radio studio. I mean, we go above and beyond here to make sure that
I am a professionally trained radio DJ,
to make sure that we sound as good as we can. And once you're listening to the show, I would put our show most days up against any other podcast, whether it be Adam Carolla or whether it be the Mike O'Mara Show or the Nerdist or any of the big podcasts. The sound that we're putting out, it starts with a quality sound. The most annoying thing for me is when someone goes, you have to check out a podcast, and it sounds like three guys yelling into a laptop, because it drives me insane. Because I'm like, I can't focus on what they're saying because it just sounds so bad. So I would say that. Get prepared. Know what you're going to have to do technically to get your show up and running, because that is the not fun part. The not fun part is the technical stuff. It's setting up your gear. It's getting your website set up. It's dealing with iTunes screwing something up. There's all of these things that you deal with when you're doing a podcast that are the not fun things that you don't hear. Like when our computer shit the bed on us and froze up, we've got to deal with that. We've got to do something with that, or we don't have a show. One week the switcher was set wrong and I had to bring out an old audio board and run this little audio board so that we could have a show. And you just have to be prepared to go, okay, what happens if something goes wrong? Mm-hmm. And if you're ready to do that and you're ready to actually take it on as a commitment, then go ahead and do it. Think of it like adopting a puppy. If you're not willing to clean up a little shit, you probably shouldn't adopt a puppy. And a podcast is like a puppy.
Yeah, I would say, like, if I don't have the same experience, I haven't started my own podcast like Nate, but I think content and commitment are the two things I've seen a lot of people start podcasts. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you know, something's going to happen, so you should have, like, 5 or 6 podcasts in the can before you even start releasing them. So, like, if you miss a week or you miss 2 weeks, like, you have shows already going so you can catch up, because I've seen people lose it because of stuff like that. Like, little things like, you know, not having the, like, if Nate, luckily Nate's done 488 shows. So if we miss a week,
we have classic episodes.
There's classic episodes that can be played while we're not here that week. And chances are it's been a long time since you've heard that show, at least 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's another part of it too, is that because you're not going to have any followers for sure for like the first 40 shows, probably. Like, you have to, it takes time for people to build up and listen to it, discover it, you know, put it on the subscribe list that they have.
There's 500,000 podcasts.
Yeah.
There's 500,000 podcasts, yeah, on iTunes. You are in competition with literally everybody, and professional broadcasters are putting out podcasts now too. So it's all of, you're competing with, but you're not competing with. And that's why, and the other thing about pot, you're not going to make any money.
Yeah.
You're not. You might get into an affiliate program like we have with Amazon, and we have a Shop Amazon tab, and people use it, and it's great, but it basically pays for the website every year. That's the money we make enough to take care of the website and a few of the other little things and incidentals that go on with that. You're not going to get rich doing a podcast unless you're somebody who has a name. If you're Adam Carolla, if you're Stone Cold Steve Austin, you're going to be able to have friggin' Shaquille O'Neal. That man mumbles his way through everything. And all of a sudden, I go, big podcast with Shaq. And I'm like, what? What? And it's on Podcast One. And that dude makes a lot of money doing that show. Because he's Shaquille O'Neal, people know him. They want to hear from him. They don't know me from a friggin' hole in the wall. I have no notoriety. I'm just a guy from Vermont who used to work in radio, who's done a little improv, done a little stand up, and I'm, you know, it's just been a, like Jason said, a commitment to doing it. There's show prep every week.
How much time do you spend prepping?
It varies. It depends on how much stupid shit's out there. I would say about I would say I prep for about as much time as we talk about on the show. So we do over 90 minutes a week with the 3 shows, and I spend, I would say, 2 to 2.5 hours. So you're going to spend at least as much time doing that sort of prep. Now, if you think you can go in and talk off the top of your head, I mean, we've done shows where we don't get to virtually anything, and we sort of rush through certain things. So we have bits that we do, but you know, it's one of those things that if you're not prepared, then you're going to be lost. There's going to be a lot of uhs and ums and what do we want to do next. I mean, shit, we have that anyway, and we are prepared.
Right. I think you covered everything I need. If we have the time for it, can I ask these guys what their favorite moments of the show
are? Yeah, go ahead.
And then,
sure, why not?
Get back to it?
Yeah, why not? We're running long, but that's okay.
All right. We'll start with you, Jason. What, like, How long have you been with the show, and what has been your favorite part so far?
So I think I've officially been with the show since August of last year. Is it like, or like, is it about like?
Yeah, late fall of 2015.
Yeah, so for over a year now. But like, yeah, I mean, I remember when Nate initially like started the podcast and talked to me. I was like, "Hey, are you interested in like this? I'm doing thinking about doing this," and I was like. I was doing improv 6 nights a week. Mm-hmm. Like I was not free, and I was working too at a dispensary. Mm-hmm. So like I was working crazy hours, and I didn't drive either. But he lives in Midtown, so I could ride my bike there. But yeah, I mean, like it's a commitment, and you have to really be part of it. But my favorite moment of the show, you know, I really enjoy.
I know what it should be. We'll see if you get it.
What my favorite moment of the show should be?
Yep.
Oh, well, I know you're probably my surprise party. Is that what you're thinking of?
That was what I was thinking of. You were totally surprised.
Yeah, I was not expecting I was asked to do the show. It was on my birthday, and like my friends showed up. Besides him, but my buddy EJ also showed up. Alex showed up. I mean, like a lot of people showed up, and it was really kind of neat to experience that. So, but my favorite moments are actually like when like Nate Green get into it. Like I was joking around about that earlier, but I like it because you know it's really kind of to the core of what I think you know this should be the goal of everybody in this nation is to be able to have civic civil conversations with each other. And like, you know, they're upset with each other and yelling, and like, they're like upset with one another. And I do feel like the kid trapped in between mom and dad fighting. So maybe I'm just a masochist, or sadist, whatever that is, also. But, I liked it because that's their friends and they're still here. And like, they're able to have, civil discourse, with one another and have that conversation. You know, so I love being part of that and being a, you know, being in that type of environment. So, yeah.
Works for me. And okay, Kareem, you're up. How long have you been with the show? And
I guess I'll say 3 years.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
And favorite part?
Favorite part? I'm going to go with two. The big argument that we had,
mm-hmm.
that was fun. Because it reminded me of, like I said, I'm from a big family. So that's what we do. Like if I go home for Thanksgiving or Christmas, we're going to have an argument like that. And then the next thing you know, we're going to be eating and laughing together. So I don't think I've taken anything personally with any of the things. And then the other thing was last year I did a 10-day silent meditation course. And so when I came back, I got to talk about that experience. And then Sushi Brian.
Mm-hmm. Sushi Brian.
Sent me a message on Facebook to talk about that. So, and so the fact that that reached him, or at least one person, then that was
And your two moments are such extremes too.
Yeah.
A peaceful meditation deal and a big argument. So that's that's pretty cool. You can achieve both things and share that with everybody.
Yeah.
Well, and the interesting thing is we had the big blowout and then we had to do another show.
Yeah.
Because we're recording three shows in a night, and it's for some reason it always seems to be the Friday show. So it's the second show we record. Mm-hmm. That there's this huge blowout, and then we have to take like a 5-minute break, and then we come back and we do the Monday show.
You have to kind of shake it off a little bit, and
yeah, just sort of a little bit of a reset. And but you know, it's one of those things where you just go, okay, we didn't call each other names,
yeah,
which was a big thing. That was the big thing. We would yell at each other, but we never really lost that respect for each other, right. Which. I think is, to Jason's point, that's what is missing. People start to argue, and then it turns into name-calling, it turns into something personal, it turns into attacking someone's core belief system, and it's not just an opinion argument, then it's a, you're a piece of shit argument.
Yeah.
You're a piece of shit for believing what you believe.
Yeah, and we always argue about opinions. Like, we keep it on the subject. It never goes beyond the subject.
Right. It's true because... Yeah.
I am a professionally trained radio DJ.
It's true. Professionally trained. With a license from the Federal Communications Commission.
Yes. And we talk about some serious shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Throughout the race relations, politics, the whole thing.
Yeah. So we've had like serious conversations that should be going on like everywhere. Like we've had those conversations.
Mm-hmm. I remember the first time you came to me at a stand-up show and you're like, I'm going to paraphrase what you said. I believe you said you need a little color in your show.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, do you want to fill in? Because always welcome. We started, we've had my co-hosts have been gays, lesbians, former cops,
Jews.
Hipsters with Sam.
Becca's now a minister. Yeah. And she performed our wedding ceremony. Yeah. So I mean,
and you got me.
Yeah.
And we got Jason.
You got Jason.
Proto hipster.
Yeah.
I was.
And everybody.
Gentrifier.
And when I got married, all of my podcast co-hosts were invited to the wedding because everybody that's been on the show with me is like family to me. And I wanted them there to share that big moment with me. And virtually everybody was able to make it. And that's awesome. So
barely.
Well, yeah, barely made it. Yeah. But that was good.
Cool. I know we're running long on time. Anything else you want to add? And we can wrap it up and take back over.
No, I just want to thank anybody who listens to the show. I honestly do appreciate it because I know what it is to put the time in to listen to a show. And if you're watching this and you haven't seen the show, haven't listened to the show, give it a listen. Try a Wednesday episode, try a Friday episode, try a Monday episode if you're feeling saucy, and just sort of give it a chance and see if we are kind of your thing. And a couple episodes. And the thing about changing the show, because we've changed it up a little bit, we've gone to the shorter shows because it's nice to have a 30-minute show as opposed to an hour is a little bit of a commitment. I have shows I listen to that they are now going to an hour 45 and 2 hours. And I'm like, I don't have that much time in the day to listen.
True that.
So set aside about a half hour, 35 minutes and just take a listen. We do appreciate it. And it's a free show. So
it's free and it's better than any of Brett Ratner's last 10 films.
Thank you for shitting on Brett Ratner at the end. That's it. That's what I expect. All right. Let's stop talking about me. Let's talk about this lady from Tennessee. She owns a yarn shop, and you're thinking, "Oh, lady that owns a yarn shop, she sounds like a delight." Why wouldn't you be a delight if you own a yarn shop? Well, especially with that Women's March, it was a great business opportunity. Protesters around the country flocked to buy yarn to make those pink hats, pussy hats. But Elizabeth Poe, the owner of a Franklin, Tennessee yarn shop called The Joy of Knitting, took no joy in the marches. A customer asked for pink yarn to knit one of the hats, according to CNN affiliate WKRN. Poe turned the shopper away and turned to Facebook to declare, "Please stop turning to Facebook, angry people." But she turned to Facebook to declare that people who want yarn for any women's movement project should shop elsewhere. She wrote, "The vulgarity, vile, and evilness of this movement is absolutely despicable. That kind of behavior is unacceptable and not welcomed at the Joy of Knitting. I will never need that kind of business to remain open." What? Women who want to march for their rights?
I just don't understand. Like, oh my God. Like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck, people? Like, your president said that he likes to grab women by the pussy. Like, he said that. That's not even, like, that's truth. He said, "I like to grab women, but I grab them by the pussy."
No. He said, "You can do anything you want. You can grab them by the pussy."
Okay. So he says
Let's
that.
Let's get the quote right.
Okay. Thank you. But this guy says that. Our president says that. And then the women that make knitted yarn hats for themselves that are pink, that don't look like a vagina. They don't look like a pussy. Like, really. Like, they... That's vile and that's disgusting. Like, you're offended by that? Fuck you. Fuck all of you, you fucking horrible people.
But the thing is, it's not like she asked her to knit her a hat.
No. Yeah.
Like, nobody said, we need you to knit us a gay hat.
Like, the post continued, as the owner of this business and a Christian, I have a duty to my customers and my community to promote values of mutual respect, love, compassion, understanding, and integrity.
You're selling yarn. Shut the fuck up.
The women's movement is counterproductive to unity of family, friends, community, and nation.
You know who else said that? I think it was Goebbels. I think he said that also.
You are selling yarn.
And that's why his yarn shop failed.
Yes. You are selling yarn. You're not... You're...
The post continued, I do pray for these women. May the God work out his love in their hearts and continue to heal and unite Americans. That's very uniting of you, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Fuck you and your movement, but I'll pray for you.
Yes. You are selling fucking yarn. You're not even selling handcuffs. You're selling yarn.
Meanwhile, in Finland, on the other side of the pond, the Finnish government has set up an ambitious goal for residents in a bid to benefit their health and their bank balances. By the way, never happened here because freedom. Officials plan to make the country tobacco-free... By 2040, meaning they want less than 2% of adults to consume tobacco in any form by that deadline. So that's more than 98% of the Finnish population saying no to cigarettes, snuff, and other forms of smokeless tobacco, including cigars, pipes, and even e-cigarettes.
Man, get the fucking e-cigarette shit out of here. It's not a cigarette. It's not, you guys are fucking idiots. Yeah.
You know you're from the South if your grandma sneezes snuff in your face.
As per the trend in industrialized countries, smoking rates in Finland have been on the decline during recent decades due to such measures as bans on advertising and shop displays and the creation of smoke-free public spaces. In 2013, 16% of people in Finland smoked on a daily basis, while nearby in the UK, 19% of adults were smokers in 2014. But at the start of this year, a new level of control measures came into force. The Finnish approach is revolutionary. We want to get rid of all tobacco products. That would never work here.
Never.
Ever.
But to call e-cigarettes like a tobacco product, it's not a fucking tobacco product. It's chemically made nicotine that is not going to... Oh, my... Fucking people, like, I hate when people pick and choose the science that they want to utilize, like, especially when it's people that are smart and utilize science for a lot of good things, but then say that e-cigarettes and are tobacco, they're not a tobacco product. It might have nicotine in it, and it could make you sick. Oh my God, I'm sorry.
Oh my God, what's that? It's time for Sex Toy News!
Oh.
It's the new segment that's sweeping the world. An Arkansas man suspected of robbing an adult novelty store was arrested after a stolen sex toy fell out of his pocket as he was approached by a police officer. I'm sorry, sir, is that a dildo in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
Oh, it's probably a pocket pussy.
Andrew Bell, 30, entered the Seduction store in Fayetteville around 9 p.m. on a Wednesday and browsed for about 30 minutes. That's a long time. Before a worker spotted him walking into the back room and attempting to get out of the sight of the employee. When the worker entered the back room, she spotted Bell closing a pocket knife with an adult sex toy in his jacket. As opposed to what other kind of sex toy? When the employee asked Bell to return the item, cops say he refused and reopened his pocket knife. That's not okay. He was briefly locked in the store by the employee. But wow. After he menaced another customer, shattering a glass countertop with his fists and began kicking at the front door, the worker unlocked the door. Within minutes, Fayetteville cops spotted a man matching his description walking a few blocks from Seductions. As the officer pulled his vehicle in front of the suspect, an adult sex toy fell from behind him to the ground.
Oh, man.
Maybe it wasn't a pocket pussy. The suspect later identified as Bell had blood on both of his hands and a club sticking out of his sleeve. A knife was also found in the front pocket of his jeans. The Seductions worker identified him as a suspect. He was arrested for aggravated robbery, assault, theft, criminal mischief, locked up in jail, pending a hearing. Oh, yeah, and the police report notes that an adult sex toy was smeared with blood and seized as evidence. I hope it's from the cuts on his hand.
The cop stuck his hand in his pocket while that was going on.
And what was it?
Unclear. It's an adult sex toy.
It was a handheld masturbator.
Aren't they all? No. By the way, crunching the numbers just got a whole lot sexier. That's right. Lovely, part sex toy, part wearable tracker.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Is a stretchy, one-size-fits-all silicone ring that sits on the base of your penis and records your movements during sex.
Yeah.
So if you just lie there and let her do all the work, you're not going to get anything out of it. The sex toy then syncs up with your smartphone and sends data to its corresponding app, where you can see the number of thrusts you performed, how many calories you burned, and how long you lasted, and the positions you tried.
Wow. Oh, who wants to know all that?
Well, apparently people who... I've got an ad blocker on. I can't see the rest of this. Hold on. Let me say, don't run on this page. Fine, jerks. It just explains about penis rings. In case you're wondering.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to go to the hospital.
They can help you maintain a hard erection, intensify your orgasms, and last longer in bed.
I am not trying to end up in the hospital with
They're supposedly beneficial.
Yeah, because the sex toy sits snugly around your penis, the blood is constricted inside your penis for a longer amount of time, prolonging your erection. That's according to Lovely's website. Plus, it also acts as a vibrator, so it gives your girl the additional clitoral stimulation that she needs to get off.
I hear you.
A battery should last for 2 hours during vibration when fully charged.
Oh, yeah.
And if you last 2 hours while fully charged, congratulations.
I'm not trying
not,
to
not for her. Man, she's probably pissed. So he just finished.
Oh, hey, here's an explaining video of what it is.
Oh, yeah, they're going to work it out.
Oh, my goodness. I got to disconnect from the... Oh, no. What's going on? It broke.
It broke. You broke it.
I've broken the internet. I've Kim Kardashian the internet here. Hold on. I got to stop sharing it to the monitor for you guys. Oh, this is good.
Lots of dildo.
Says Lovely is stretchy. Wear it on your penis for stronger, longer lasting erections. They show it on a banana next to a... Yeah, it vibrates. Yeah, fine. Screw you and your video with a half cut cantaloupe.
Yeah.
Screw you. We know what we're doing.
We know what we're doing.
We know what we're doing.
Two of us are married.
It's true. Two of us are married.
And they've been married for both of us.
True that.
Hey, I'm only married to one woman.
Aww.
The perfect one.
She's pretty amazing.
It's true. Not going to lie. Because she listens to the show. She's fantastic. Just gonna let you know that. Oh, you want that?
Nate is good at holding, Nate is good at holding his breath.
You can go ahead and do that, or you can just say, I'm smart. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Nate Darling Show. Thanks for listening through all of our self-indulgent bullshit. Coming soon to a video screen near you, you'll be able to see how that long, rambling answer was whittled down to something coherent by a trained professional.
There you go.
Very much worth it all. All right, so we're going to wrap it up. We'll be back on Wednesday with another fresh new episode for y'all. Hey, by the way, I just want to say this. That Super Bowl was fantastic, wasn't it?
Oh, it was amazing.
Oh, my God.
It's one of the best.
Oh, my God. It was fantastic. By the way, Valentine's Day is coming up. Better be ready.
Better be ready.
Better be ready. Flowers. Candy.
Maybe.
I think my wife's gonna be out of town for Valentine's Day. Honestly, a lot of travel.
Good for you.
A lot of travel.
Oh, I'm sorry, Nate.
Good for you. Do you wish your
good
wife were out of
you.
Town? Hold on. There we go.
Hooray!
Oh, here it is.
Oh, good for you.
No, I'm sorry.
That's all. It's all good. Valentine's Day is an arbitrary made-up holiday anyway.
Exactly.
So
I love my wife every day.
Yeah. Yeah, every right? day. Every day is Valentine's Day, isn't it?
Exactly.
When you're married to the perfect woman.
Exactly.
It's the way it is.
It's the way it is.
All right. 21 Pilots coming to Sacramento later on this month. I sadly will not be there.
Hmm.
I've developed a new appreciation for them since I found the ukulele cover of the Elvis song Can't Help Falling in Love that they do.
Oh.
Yeah. Very all cool right. stuff. Check it out. It's on YouTube. And leave you with their song Stressed Out in case you had a Monday.
Yeah.
Or a case of the Mondays. We'll see you next time. Bye. To sleep, but now we're stressed out. Wish we could turn back time to the good old days when the mama sang us to sleep, but now we're stressed out. Used to play pretend, give each other different names. We would build a rocket ship and then we'd fly it far away. Used to dream of outer space, but now they're laughing at the face, saying, wake up, you need to make money.
Thanks for listening, and remember to use the Shop Amazon tab at natedarlingshow.com.